where possible, the trade union movement, and particularly the Labour Party, to change the policy of this Labour government would probably be the greatest asset to the Vietnamese revolution. Because don't forget, it was the Johnson administration, when all the other countries basically around him were disowning the policy of Vietnam, it was his one big ally that Britain itself, or the British government itself, would turn around and say, please support American policy in Vietnam. Now, to change that will have a tremendous effect on the Johnson administration and a tremendous effect on the American people. And if you don't understand that, Conway, I think you don't understand Marx.
Yeah.
Well, just like the last comment who smiled, I also went to be a shop steward at a factory. You don't have to go in for a set of Andrew, but I went to be a shop steward. And he replied to his point, he called upon us to change the policy. Wilson, if this was physically possible to change his policy, the country would have made it a long time ago. But doesn't he understand basically what Wilson and his crew are? But basically, the Social Democrats were winning totally, 100%, not only on the grounds of economic reasons, but for absolutely emotive reasons as well. They're winning for imperialism. You won't change Wilson's policy. The only thing you can do is fight inside the Labour movement to remove Wilson. Putting forward the idea of somehow putting pressure on Wilson, pressurising Wilson to the left. And so this has been tried by all the communist parties throughout Western Europe. Time and time again, it's always failed. You cannot pressurise. When the Social Democratic government comes into power, it will always swing to the right. It will under these circumstances. To talk about changing rules and policy is completely irrelevant. I think the main struggle is to build a viable movement. This is something that you should attack this now very effectively by convincing the whole by building an effective movement of opposition to the Vietnam War. This is the issue involved. It's not a question of being able to get up and meet and speak for hours. Or everybody fears the process. What's the problem is that we're able to get down to it and build a movement. And I'd be much more inclined to listen to Mr. Tass's arguments if we'd seen him just start outside Grosvenor Square, if we'd seen him organising weeks before, if we'd seen him organising even at a local level to get their seat with his function. If I remember rightly, the last time I saw Mr. Tass at a BSC meeting was when he turned up at a resolution called me on the TVC Farm and Green Working Class.
Do you want a few minutes on this? Because we'd like to get kicked out any time.
Well, I would first like to say a few words on Spain and Greece. I, of course, agree with the comrade who raised the question that Spain and Greece are today amongst the weakest links in the capitalist part of Europe. And that, especially for the time being, Spain sees the promising development of the beginning of a mass movement to overthrow the Franco regime and to question the capitalist regime in Spain, as well amongst the workers as amongst the students. In Greece, the question is that the movement has suffered a defeat. I mean, there are certain comrades who think that it is unrevolutionary to recognize defeats. I say that when the working class, which a few years ago surged by hundreds of thousands in the street, and afterwards, without reaction, allows a reactionary, semi-fascist military dictatorship to be established and all its freedoms to be suppressed, this is a defeat for the working class. The same time as the establishment of the, on a different level of course, of the incomes policy without strong reaction, organized industrial action in any capitalist country is a defeat. You must recognize the facts for what they are. I come to this question. I am really astonished at the kind of arguments the comrades put up. They explain. What you explain is the reasons for the defeat. You do not explain away the defeat by saying that the workers had illusions in social democracy. Of course they have. They had illusions that Ebert and Noske were establishing a socialist republic in Germany in 1918. Does that reduce the scope of the defeat? They had the illusion that Léon Blum was establishing a socialist government in France in 1936. Does it reduce the amount of the defeat? The illusions of the workers explain why they do not react quickly enough against the betrayals of the Social Democrats, that they can't explain away the objective results of it. I ask you a very concrete question. You have two possibilities. There is an upsurge of a down. What will replace the Wilson government? If you say the Wilson government, the workers in England are on the offensive and will replace the Wilson government by an extreme left workers government in Britain, okay, I will say, I agree with you, we have a working class offensive. Or will the Wilson government be replaced by a Tory government or by a national coalition government which will lead very quickly to a Tory government? To pose the question is to answer it. Could you say that it was a big victory for the working class what happened in 1931? I mean, the fact that illusions are lost, the fact that you have a process of consciousness which develops, okay, you have to integrate it into a general analysis. But the objective result in the class struggle is unfortunately in the immediate future decisive. And I say in the immediate period, the immediate balance sheet of the Labour government till now in Britain has been a weakening of the working class and not a strengthening. I see this is obvious. All the employers recognize it. Everybody recognizes it. It's not a revolutionary who should deny a thing like that. When you say that the Wilson government suppressing its support to Johnson would be a tremendous blow to the Johnson administration, I don't know when that moment will come, but I ask you a concrete question. Wasn't the Tet Offensive in this beginning of this year a tremendous blow to the Johnson administration? Of the concrete crisis today. You cannot oppose hopes for tomorrow to concrete questions, concrete struggles which go on today. I have nothing against the dispute is on your part, not on mine. I do not advise the British workers to stop or to underestimate the struggle against the incomes policy or the struggle against the wage freeze. I say it is a very important struggle. But from the point of view of the immediate revolutionary tasks, the immediate revolutionary task today in the world, the Vietnamese revolution takes precedence, takes priority. This seems obvious. This has nothing to do with any illusions in the leadership of that revolution. This has nothing to do with it. We don't have illusions in that leadership. Comparisons with Benbella seems absolutely out of the question. The comrades there challenge a basic tenet of the theory of permanent revolution. Do you really think that the Vietnamese Communist Party is a peasant party? Do you think that the Chinese Communist Party is a peasant party? Do you now believe that a peasant party can exist and can overthrow capitalism? I do not believe they are peasant parties. I believe that they are deformed or degenerated working class parties. Their cadres, their ideology, come from the working class movement, not from the peasantry. There has never been in the history of the world any peasant party capable of overthrowing capitalism. And I think in North Vietnam, capitalism has been overthrown. In Algeria, capitalism has not been overthrown, and it is not by accident, because in Algeria you did not have a working class, be it deformed, degenerated, or anything you want to call it, party. But there you had a bourgeois or petty bourgeois nationalist leadership, and that is unable to overthrow capitalism. We do not equate the situation in Vietnam, neither with Algeria nor with Russia. It's another situation. It's much more comparable, for instance, to the situation in China, if you want to make comparisons. But in any case, that's besides the point. We are discussing not about the ideal form of worker state and about the program of working class democracy, on which I agree with you. We are discussing on concrete impacts today on the world scale on imperialism. And we ask a concrete question. Who are today, immediately, today, tomorrow, in the next 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, and let us hope months, delivering the strongest blows against world imperialism? Isn't it obvious that it are the Vietnamese workers and peasants? Who can doubt that? And haven't we a specific duty, independent from the question of struggling for against the incomes policy or against unemployment? Wasn't that the way the working class movement and the communist movement always posed the problem any time there was a revolution in the past? Wasn't it tasked to defend the Russian Revolution, or let us take even a worse example, to defend the Spanish Revolution, a task separate from, a specific task, separate from the general conduction of the class struggle which you have to conduct whether there is a revolution or not in any other country. I mean, this distinction you must understand, that there is a special and specific problem which poses specific tasks. I say, at a certain level of consciousness, you can blend the two. But excuse me,
I know I will shock you, but those who are backward, if you look at it from a revolutionary Marxist point of view, in that connection, are not the Vietnamese workers and peasants. Those who are backward and who prevent this blending immediately are, unfortunately, the British and Western European workers, because they do not understand the need for immediate political power. If you would have an immediate struggle for power in Western Europe, the problem would not be posed, because you do not have that. And because you do not have revolutionary mass consciousness amongst the Western European working class, you have this temporary divorce of the two tasks, and you have the attempts of revolutionists to fight for both, to look towards a future blending of both whenever this is possible, but not to forget or to subordinate one to the other. And I say, comrade, if you would have been in Berlin, and if you would have understood what it means in this ultra-reactionary city of West Berlin, with its anti-communist hysteria, where even six months ago, nobody dared raise a red flag because he was immediately accused of being a Russian agent or a Russian spy. If you would have understood what the defense of the Vietnamese revolution has created there has changed, that now you had 1,000 red flags in West Berlin, and now you had hundreds and hundreds of photographs, not only of Ho Chi Minh, but of Lenin, of Rosa Luxemburg, of Trotsky, of Liebknecht walking through the streets of Berlin, then you must understand concretely how the struggle to defend the Vietnamese revolution can also be a lever for heightening the anti-capitalist and revolutionary consciousness of the people in Western Europe.
Just one or two announcements, and then I'll go back into the discussion.